Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
All right, this is exciting. Ruskin and Zach.
It is?
It is. Complete Layaway Wednesday here on the program. You can text us at 866-285-4005 and be a part of this here shindig that we got going on today here on Ruskin and Zach. And we have a lot to get to because not that long ago, Sam Pittman met with the media. And we have the highlights. First place you've probably heard these highlights, because this ended less than an hour ago. So we've got some cuts as some of the players are back. Others will be coming back. June 8th, they can be in the building, but then the coaches can't be around them in the building. It's a really odd kind of situation that we're going to be living for the foreseeable future in a college football way of speaking, in addition to everything else going on. With the restrictions of COVID-19 and everything. So we got a lot of cuts to get into here with Coach Pittman, and we will react to those accordingly. We've got other things to get into. It's
busy Wednesday.
It's a busy Wednesday.
Busy Wednesday.
How are you doing over there?
You know what? Did you partake in anything last night in the protest?
No, I didn't make it down there. No.
I was within earshot. I was close enough to observe, but not close enough to participate.
Why didn't you go down there?
Well, I wanted to watch. I just wanted to watch and see. Well, I've never been more proud to live in Northwest Arkansas than I was last night.
Right?
It was moving. It was a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what I expected from people in this area.
Yeah. I love, we forget this, but also on Sunday down in Fort Smith, they had a peaceful protest for several hours, too. So, yeah, last night was all you could have hoped for, I think. I mean, there was some tiny rowdiness, but for the most part, things were civil and peaceful. And you're going to hear Sam Pittman was down there, and you're going to hear him talk about that as well here in his remarks. In fact, let's start there, as a matter of fact. He was asked why he went down to the Fayetteville Square to see the protest on Tuesday night.
In my heart, I wanted to go. I wanted to support our football team. I wanted to support the protest. And that's what I believe in. You know, I think you can tweet about stuff. You can you can do a lot of things. You can take a picture for somebody to show. You can do whatever you want, but actions are strong. I felt like for me, the best way for me to address the situation was to go be a part of what could be a solution. No other reason. I didn't go down there. If someone would take my picture, I didn't go down there. I went down there because I wanted to support the players on our football team and their families.
So there you go. There is Sam Pittman. And again, I didn't know he was there until there was a photo that someone had this morning that popped up on social media. So there wasn't, a big camera crew there. There wasn't, school photographers there documenting this. And this is the proper way that this should be handled. You go for the right reasons, not, hey, look at me, look what I'm doing here. And that's exactly what the motives were here. You could tell this weight on his heart. He wanted to be there and wanted to be a part of this.
Well, I think he understands that this is not a photo op. It's not about him.
No,
that this is about something much larger than that. And he made his presence. People saw him there, but he did not make it about him.
But he didn't grab the mic. No. He didn't do it. He didn't do anything. He was just there, and he was there to listen. Not to be seen. See what may continue to, I don't know anything on the Harbaugh front or anything like that, because that's obviously who he probably could have been definitely referring to in his comments about, you know, getting a picture made or whatever. But I don't know what Harbaugh's intentions were. They may be honorable, but I mean, it's just when, you know, you run into some odd stuff when there's cameras and a photo crew, and it's not, and this is not particularly if you're a white head coach. Again, we've said this yesterday. Shut up and listen. That's what this is all about. You know, just be there, understand. Don't grab the mic. Don't do it. Nothing. This is not the time for that. And I thought Sam Pittman had good remarks and laid it out pretty well there. Yeah. Why he went to this thing. Yeah. Wasn't there to be seen. Was there to for support. So that's nice to see. Now on the other part of this is the actual football part of this, which is really. We got a little bit more insight on this, listening to this, 45 minutes of a press conference today. It's really going to be clumsy and clunky and awkward because, you know, they're still trying to figure out things about who can go where and do what. Here is the very latest Sam Pittman remarked about in terms of getting players back in the building.
As of right now, we're not allowed to watch them do anything, not only throwing and catching, but in the weight room as a coach. Now the strength coaches, obviously they need to be there for safety reasons and to teach them how to lift correctly. But right now we're having no access with them whatsoever for the month of June as it is now.
Okay. Also was asked about, they still don't know when training camp will begin. That has still not yet been determined in college football. So, you start to piece all this together. This is not the most talented roster in the league. They have done no on-field work at all as a collective group as a football team, and it is June 3rd. And you just wonder, what in the world is this going to look like on September 5th if they play a football game? What's it going to look like going to Notre Dame on September 12th? You know? It's intriguing and frightening all at the same time.
The good news, and again, I've listened to podcasts from around the country about how teams are going to structure their offseason, and everybody's got a different attack. Teams like Michigan and Ohio State, Notre Dame, they're all going to the NFL-style OTAs, where you can have weight training, then you're going to have 2 weeks of sort of OTAs, and then they're going to hit the practice field. That I would imagine that Arkansas is going to have some version of that they're going to roll out, but again, you don't have to make that decision right now on June the 3rd. Once you get the kids back on campus, get them in the weight room, get them into some sort of weight training conditioning program. And to me, that's paramount because you can have a lot of soft tissue injuries from inadequate weight training. These kids have been off for months. They've been left to their own devices to train. And let's be honest, when they get back on campus, they're not going to be in the greatest shape in the world. They're not going to be in football shape. They'll be in shape, but they will not be in football shape.
Well, here's what Sam Pittman had to say along those lines about what the players have been doing on their own time and not been able to monitor everything all the time like they normally would.
I trust our kids, and I trust that they are doing what we ask them to do. Obviously, we've had constant contact with our guys. There's reasons behind that. One of them is obviously to see what they're doing, how they're doing with the lifts. But we chose to trust. Our big deal was, why can't you come back in as good a shape as if you were here? And the bottom line is, we trust that our kids are going to be in outstanding shape when they get back.
Okay.
I mean, you're banking on these kids coming in at 75%, 60 to 75% of where they should be. And then, then you get caught up in the next couple of weeks, and you turn them loose sometime in August. But again, everybody's fighting this. Everybody is having the same problem.
But this is a two-prong situation here, because everything you've said is right. The thing I'm also concerned about, because I think that that you can get a team in physical shape, that can happen. Here's where I'm coming from is, how many plays do they know how to run? 5? 10?
Well,
they never run a play. This group has never done anything football wise.
The nuances. I mean, the Braille system to the Morse system. There are things that are translatable. The terminology, the nuances, the reads, that's where they're going to struggle a little bit, and that's where they're going to be behind. They're going to be behind Nevada, who's bringing back a lot of guys. Yep. Be behind Notre Dame, who's bringing back a lot of guys. The learning curve will be much longer for this group. So what do? You condense everything. Simple is fast.
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
They could, in theory, have the same record last year, and it's not because it's just an abject failure. It's just because nobody knows anything.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what... Nobody. The pandemic for a program that has to totally rebuild, it's kind of like a death penalty in a way.
But they're not alone. Week 3, Mississippi State, same boat.
Yeah, but Mississippi State's won more than 4 games in the last 2 years, and they've won an SEC game recently.
Oh, aren't you a ray of sunshine?
Thank you. Ruskin and Zach, news next.
The Razorback Talk Show, designed for smart fans. This is Ruskin and Zach.
26 minutes, silly hour here on Ruskin and Zach, and we are going to, it's magazine, college football magazine season.
It's Christmas, believe it or not.
That's right. We love it. And the Athlon magazine is available, previewing the college football season. A college football season, it's probably going to be like none other we have seen. So for more on that, we bring in Braden Gall from Athlon Sports here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Hi, Braden. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Good to talk to you.
So we'll start with Arkansas. We've seen some of the previews already that Athlon again has forecasted Arkansas to not win an SEC game for the third straight season.
Was that a question?
It wasn't a very good question. I'll give you that.
No. Listen, 3-9, 0-8 is the projection, and again, I'm not going to sit here and say that was my idea or I agree or disagree. I agree with where Arkansas is picked in the West, and that was at 7. So, do they find a way to get a W somewhere along the road? It's certainly possible. Having a non-conference game like Notre Dame certainly doesn't help. I think it's unfortunate, and this is just how I view it. It's unfortunate that I don't think you're ever going to really know from scheme to scheme to scheme if any program can go and swing that dramatically in that short a period of time and expect to have success. Even some of the premier national championship caliber programs that are winning, you know, the Ohio States of the world don't do that. So I just don't, that's just a tough ask. That's a really hard ask to go from a Brett Bielema style into a Chad Morris sort of intellectual, sort of analytical style of pass happy offense to back to what we're not sure, you know, what sure exactly Sam Pittman is going to bring. I think Kendall Brown certainly fits into a little bit more of the Chad Morris bucket than he would certainly Brett Bielema. But I just think, what is the identity going to be like under an offensive line coach? And there's not a lot of precedent in the sport right now. I mean, Matt Luke at Ole Miss, okay. There's not a lot of precedent for offensive line coaches going to become head coaches. And so we don't really know what the influence on the offense is going to look like. But if it's going to be like an offensive lineman, and his, true to his roots, then I think you're looking at time to develop a roster that, you know, the recruiting wasn't necessarily the problem. They had some nice, talented young players under Chad Morris. So I think 10,000-foot view from our perspective is, okay, you're starting back from zero again, and you're re-implementing another switch, another shift, and you're not sure how quickly that could take place. So I think that it's more about unknowns than it is anything else at that. Especially on that side of the ball, talent just needs to be built up on the defensive side of the ball, regardless of scheme that you're playing.
I'm curious of what the national perception is of the Sam Pittman hire. When you look at Eli Drinkwitz going to Missouri, Leach down at Mississippi State, Kiffin at Ole Miss, and then Sam Pittman, a first-time head coach coming to Arkansas, a place he'd been before. But, you know, here inside the state, I mean, we've all sort of grown to love the guy. I mean, he says everything correctly. But what's the perception outside the borders of the state of Arkansas?
That it didn't go down the way it was planned. It doesn't mean it's not going to be successful, though. I mean, that's, you know, LSU fans didn't want Coach O, and don't let them tell you anything else other than that either, by the way. Like, the percentage of people that thought Coach O was the greatest hire and that they're going to win championship with Coach O and he's the guy to return us to prominence, the percentage of LSU fans, if I had to guess, that loved that hire, which is somewhat similar, right? A guy that has history there, He's a defensive line coach by trade. The big difference, of course, is head coaching experience. If you count 3-21 in the SEC at Ole Miss as experience. So, there's some similarities there. And if you're hopeful about Sam Pittman, that's the model. You're talking about a guy who's been there, who knows the culture, who knows the people, who wants to create buy-in. And that's what Dabo Swinney did at Clemson as an interim wide receivers coach when he took over. And that's what Coach O was able to do at LSU, even though most LSU fans will tell you they didn't like the move when it happened. And so there's a lot of revisionist history in sports, shockingly. So the way you look at it is, I don't think this is how they planned on it going. And I'm not sure if you gave anybody that was in a position of power or some truth serum that what they would tell you. I think they'd have to admit that. I don't think Missouri went the way they expected it to go either, necessarily. I don't think that was the plan, right? I always believe in firing a coach because you have a plan in place. And that means either someone you know will say yes and you want to go get, or a short list of people you know will say yes. And so I don't think either Missouri or Arkansas did that. I think Ole Miss and Mississippi State, you could argue, did that. And so that's probably the separation, is that two programs felt like they had a guy that they targeted, that they wanted, and they went and got, and they executed on it, and the other two didn't necessarily. Now, again, I think very highly of Eli Drinkwitz. I think his offense after, you look at NC State under Dave Doran after he left and the offense has plummeted into sort of nothing. Can he run a program? Who knows? But he's a really good offensive mind and a really good coach. Sam Pittman's probably the best offensive line coach in the country. He's an excellent recruiter. Those are the things you would have said about Jeremy Pruitt when he took the Tennessee job, and a lot of people questioned that hire. So these things can go either way, and I think the perception of how it played out, you want to talk about complete circus of a sideshow when talks about hiring a coach, that was Tennessee. We still don't know if Jeremy Pruitt's going to be great. It looks like they're trending in the right direction. They still haven't beat anybody with, a winning SEC record, but whatever. So, they're Tennessee fans are excited. So you can stumble into really good coaches. It happens all the time because really smart people make bad decisions and smart decisions all the time on accident. So I think that's the perception nationally. And the perception of the head coach is very specifically, he is arguably the best offensive line coach in the country, and he's going to be a great recruiter. That's almost the exact tagline I would have used for Coach O along the defensive line, or Jeremy Pruitt in the secondary. And great recruiters and brilliant at what they do, what they coach. Do they have any idea how to be CEOs in the most cutthroat league in America? That remains to be seen.
We're talking with Braden Gall from Athlon here on Ruskin and Zach. You brought up something earlier that I hadn't really thought of, and that the perception we've had here is that, yes, Pittman is going to lean on his handpicked offensive line coach to shore up the offensive line, but Briles is going to have carte blanche with the offense, and it's going to be Briles' offense with a better offensive line. Is that possible, or do you think Pittman wants to put a more kind of ground and pound sort of imprint on Arkansas football? Because the most recent success they had was those years when they were doing that with Alex Collins and Jonathan Williams here.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. That question is fascinating. And I think Arkansas is a very unique program in that sense, that they've got a ton of money. You've got great fans. You've got a not the greatest home recruiting base, but you're the only show in the state, and you can get to Texas pretty quickly. So there's a lot of natural inherent advantages to being at Arkansas that you don't have at, say, Kentucky even. And I think that's why, and even under, Bobby P, they were able to run the football. He was brilliant at throwing the football. There's no question. But everybody assumes that Bobby Petrino, even back to the Louisville days with Michael Bush, he built his offenses on power running. Gus Malzahn runs a spread based on power rushing. So I still think there has to be an element of line of scrimmage play in the SEC. But how do you do that at a program like Arkansas, where there's clearly a lot to work with, but it's not as much as Alabama, LSU, A&M, and Auburn? And that's the problem. Missouri, Arkansas is a way better job than Missouri. South Carolina and Arkansas are very parallel in my mind when it comes to really great fan support, lots of money, decent recruiting base, and hasn't really been able to get over the hump in the modern era because they're in a division where there are just three or four other programs that have more of all of the same stuff. And that's just a really difficult. So do you have to, long story short here, do you have to zig, right, when everybody else is zagging? And I think that works for programs like West Virginia, maybe a Missouri. I think when you run those types, you're going to go zone read. I don't know if Mike Leach's system at in the SEC is going to work, because eventually at some point you have to play line of scrimmage football. You've got to get stops. You got to pick up third and short, fourth and goal. You got to be able to do that stuff in this league. It's not like the Pac-12. And even at Washington State, you know, Chris Peterson and the Washington Huskies figured out a way to stop Washington State every single year. And that's because they had talent and they were really well coached defensively along the defensive line. So I think at some point you still have, it's a line of scrimmage league. And so I think having Sam Pittman and his skills is a huge plus. But do you want to have it mixed in with the spread principles? Because you can't really do what Alabama does unless you've got equal level players. And how many teams in America have that? Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, maybe. Like even, I mean, Auburn and A&M don't have it. So I just think you can't do exactly what Alabama does to Alabama unless you've got equal talent. And so that's why I think it might be, if you know, I'm talking myself into a nice blend of spread with power. And you put those together and you go, okay, maybe you got something there.
We've been at this for about 9.5 minutes. We've not mentioned Felipe Franks. The quarterback position the last 2 years has been a disaster. It appears, at least on paper, that they have solved the problem for this year, possibly next year. What's your opinion of Felipe Franks coming into this system with Kendall Briles?
I think number one, Dan Mullen is a freaking genius at the position. There's no question about that. Number two, I think Felipe Franks was largely undervalued as a player during his full season as a starter, the second full season as a starter at Florida, and then even a little bit of last year before he got hurt. I think the skill and the talent, the athletic ability, the raw ability has always been there. I think he needed someone to develop him. I think Dan Mullen's scheme might be the best offensive scheme in America for quarterbacks, so I think that's partly why he flourished. But his numbers 2 years ago were really good. I mean, I want to say, I don't have it in front of me, but I want to say almost 30 touchdowns total with like 6 or 7 interceptions. I mean, really efficient football for a Florida program that I think had 4 wins the year before and a new coaching staff. So he's been through a lot, and he has a ton of experience. He's got a ton of athletic ability. He's made big plays against rivals in big games. Doesn't mean that he's, you know, good enough to beat Georgia and win the East and be a championship caliber quarterback. Probably not. But I think he went from punchline his first year to sort of a pretty efficient, you know, pretty efficient game-winning quarterback the next year. And as long as he still has all of those skills, I think he's a heck of a player, especially in a league where there's no clear-cut answer to that position anywhere right now. You know, Alabama, I'm not worried about. I think one of those two guys is going to be great. You know, no idea if Miles Brennan is any good or not. I think Bo Nix is pretty good. But you know, is KJ Costello going to transfer in and be the best quarterback in the West? Like that is the guy who ran for 1,000 yards for Ole Miss the best quarterback in the West? Like we just don't know what that position is going to look like. And having a guy who started a boatload of games in the SEC puts you ahead of a lot of other people.
When you've we're talking with Braden Gall from Athlon here on Ruskin and Zach. When you're putting together a preseason magazine this year, it's unlike any other year, I would imagine, because some teams had a little spring practice, like some like Arkansas had no spring practice at all. So when you have spoken to people to try and get these write-ups together, how have coaches been able to evaluate really anything?
That we're all in the same boat guessing here. But some of the preseason fun every year is guesswork, because let's be honest. I mean, these little, so number one, what's different between our magazine and everybody else is that we go out and get beat writers, people that are on campus or around campus that cover the team, that go to practice, you know, during the fall and in the spring and in the summer to write our stories, because we want to give the best possible information to our reader. And not every magazine does that. We don't have to name them, but not every magazine does that. And we're proud of doing that. Having said that, even going to beat writers who are at spring practice every day, these little feudal dictators who run college football programs that are called head coaches, they don't actually give you any information anyway. So there is an element of, man, I wish we could have had a little more insight into the battle for the left tackle here, or a little bit more insight into the quarterback battle there. And certainly you can gain some information, but largely these coaches don't let anything out, man. They don't. I mean, and especially in the SEC, it's not necessarily this way in the Pac-12, where everything's a little bit more laid back. Some of the, you know, some of the smaller schools in the Big Ten and the ACC don't mind. But where football is as important as it is in the SEC or in Texas or wherever, you know, it's not a lot of information comes out during spring ball anyway. So there's an element of guesswork no matter what. And There's an asterisk next to 2020 for every sport, you know, whether it's the NBA, Major League Baseball, hockey, you know, the Masters, the Derby, the Indy 500, college football. There's going to be an asterisk next to everything, and it counts. Everybody, you know, everyone's going to give a championship away, hopefully, but it's a little different than any other year, and so there's a little bit more guesswork in already a sport that's the most volatile from year to year anyway. So to me, it just adds more excitement. It didn't make putting the magazine together any easier, and we're gonna get a lot of stuff wrong, but we do that every year anyway. So we get a lot of stuff right, we get a lot of stuff wrong, and but we're giving you our best our best, most educated guess, and we did that with as much information as possible this year.
Magazine's out today. One of my favorite parts of your magazine are the anonymous coaches. How hard is it to get these coaches to talk about other programs in their conference? Because some of the quotes are brutally honest.
Not if you've ever met a coach and you're talking to him off the record, the answer is not hard at all. coaches are like teenage sorority girls. They will blab and blab and blab and blab and blab if they know they're protected. And we have a really, really long track record of guaranteeing that sort of anonymity. I can't even say the word. And so I think, you know, we're the oldest learning magazine of our kind, and I can't remember actually the year we started putting in the anonymous scouting reports. I'm with you. It is my favorite part of the magazine, and we have to trim it down. And so that's my favorite part of having this job since 2007 is I see all the stuff that hits the cutting room floor on the scouting reports. And I love, you know, when we look at 15 bullet points about a team and we've got to cut it to 8 or 9 or 10 and we pick the best ones, and some of them we have to be really delicate about because if you read through the lines, you can kind of try to guess as to who it is, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
Every one of these is done from another coach or another staff member in the conference. So we've got every one of those reports in the SEC is a quote from another SEC head coach or coordinator. And it's the same thing in the ACC, same thing in the other leagues as well, and it is by far, I'm with you, it's by far my favorite part, and I think our track record of maintaining that wall,
yeah,
is why we get those, and I'd like to think that, listen, I'm not a huge fan of the anonymous source thing when it comes to, you know, breaking news all the time. I'd like to, you know, we could have a really long debate about that, but I think when it comes to this kind of stuff, I've been around enough SEC coaches with after a couple pops, and man, you get, if they know it's off the record, they are not afraid to talk. they're just not. I had one. I'm not going to tell you the coach in the SEC. It's a current head coach in the SEC. Somebody told me this guy was a total cancer off the record. He goes, that guy's a total cancer off the record. And it's like, you know, I can't tell you who said it or who it's about, but it's one of those things where you're just going, man, you would never have said that if in any other walk of life, if you were currently employed, if you were on television, like you would never have said that. But you had a beer and you're off the record talking to a media guy, and all of a sudden you start blathering because maybe, who knows, maybe you don't like the guy. I don't know.
It's Saban, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It was actually Saban talking about
Saban yeah.
as bulletin board material for himself.
How many of these radio interviews do you do where people try and guess and you got to be like, look, I can't, come on, we can't just guess right now. Come on.
It's a lot fewer than you think, actually. Okay. I think a lot of people, because it's such a great, I mean, you guys aren't the first ones that ask, like, hey, this is our favorite part. It's everybody's favorite part. Yeah. And if we all go like, hey, we'll just let them do their thing and not bother them about it, we'll keep getting it every year. And yeah. So that's sort of how it's worked. And again, I'm with you guys. It's the day I walked into the office in 07 and took the job. It was my favorite part of the magazine. And it's been that way ever since.
Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, and who's the fourth team in the playoff?
Oklahoma's our pick. It's not. Oh, I don't think they're the fourth best team.
Not again. Come on.
Zach is the Notre Dame fan, Braden. We should point out.
Tell somebody in the Big 12 to hire somebody to be Oklahoma. Like, just seriously, like, because I don't think they're the fourth best team. I don't. I would have them one spot ahead of Notre Dame at 8 in my power rankings. Just if I had to think about it off the top of my head. No, I think they're probably the 8. Like, they're in a tier with. You know, we've got Notre Dame at 9, Oregon at 10, A&M at 11. I think Oklahoma's more in that tier. If you had to tell me who's better, LSU, Florida, Georgia, Penn State, I think all four of those teams are better than Oklahoma. But you look at Oklahoma State, Texas, Iowa State, and there's a lot to like about all of them. There's a lot to not like about all of them. So it's just who's going to beat Oklahoma, and their margin for error is so much greater than everybody else because they can lose a game in the league and then come back and beat that team in their conference championship game. So, sure they play Tennessee in the non-conference. Tennessee's improving, but I don't think they're good enough to go into Oklahoma and win that game. So they're probably going to be, 3-0 in the non-conference. Are there some stumbling blocks in there? Sure. But it's way easier for a one-loss Oklahoma to get in than it's going to be for a two-loss Pac-12 Oregon team champion or a second-place SEC team or even a second-place Penn State team, because it's just the margin for error is that much smaller and certain things have to happen out of your control, whereas Oklahoma can just rock and roll and they can just control it. So unfortunately, it's Oklahoma, but I do think they're closer teams in the Big 12 to them than the last couple of years, namely because of the quarterback situation. But the top three are the three I would pick a title winner from.
Braden Gall, the Athlon Sports College Football Magazine's on newsstands today. Braden, we really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. AthlonSports.com.
All right.
Buy us magazine, please.
All right. That's right. Thank you. Braden Gall, Athlon Sports, AthlonSports.com. All our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach.
The Bad Boys of Arkansas Radio.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
Looking forward to this conversation here on this Friday afternoon on Ruskin and Zach. Played at Fayetteville High School, played for the Razorbacks, played in the NFL. Brandon Allen is with us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Brandon, it's good to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Appreciate the time today. We were talking earlier. I think, and you can tell us if I'm wrong, I think history is kind to you because I feel like Razorback fans appreciate you more now than they did when you played. I remember when you were played and I was hosting these shows, and there were a lot of people that didn't have a lot of nice things to say about you back then. But now I feel like Razorback fans appreciate the job that you did and all those wins back then.
Well, it's not an easy job, I'll tell you that. So, it takes a lot to play the quarterback position because you lose and win at that position. So it's definitely tough for anyone to play it.
You would understand this better than anybody. I mean, what Felipe Franks is sort of stepping into, where he becomes the figurehead for the football program in the state of Arkansas and all the good and bad that comes with it. What are the kinds of things that he can expect from non-football parties?
Well, I think I was able to talk to him a few times since before all the COVID and all that, and I think he's a confident guy. He's gonna do a lot of good things for us, so I'm excited for what he can do, and I think he's got a real level head on his shoulder, so I think he knows he's here to win some games, and that's exactly what he's gonna do for us.
There's few guys, but there are guys who were in that role, being the quarterback at that school, the flagship school of the state. Do you guys ever, text or chat about this experience or that experience and how you handled all that stuff? Do you talk to the other former Arkansas quarterbacks?
I have. I was close with Tyler Wilson and Ryan Mallett, and obviously my brother, so we talk about it. But It's back then, we win a lot of games. It was fun and things were great. And, obviously we had a bit of a slump here in the last couple of years, but, like you always said, there's always goods and bads. There's a lot of good times when you're winning, having a good time. And then when you lose, it's tough. It's tough on, not just yourself, but the whole state, rooting for you and then not seeing the results. So, we stay in contact and I don't know if we reminisce so much, but, we definitely talked about our times playing at Arkansas.
Brandon, there's a question I've always wanted to ask you, and I've never had an opportunity, and you'll never get asked this question anywhere else but right here. On the Henry heave, okay, you've done your part, ball's out of your hand, you're watching this. When the ball goes up in the air and Hunter throws it up in the air, and you go, and the first thing that runs through your head is, what?
That ball's headed my direction. I'm kind of hoping and praying. I see Alex next to me, so I'm kind of hoping he gets on it. It actually worked out perfectly.
I've watched it from a couple of different angles, and I mean, your eyes got as big as saucers when that thing went up in the air. I mean, ultimately the play works out, and ultimately you guys are a part of history. You seal the game, but I mean, in that moment, you've got to be thinking to yourself, "Oh my God, the ball's in the air and it's coming my way.
It's not supposed to come back.
It's not supposed to come backwards. It goes forwards."
That was definitely a first for me. I was sitting there, you know, looking for anyone past the first down markers, and you know, I could have, you know, threw a Hail Mary up or something, and I saw Hunter probably about, at the time, I thought he was about 5 yards short. I think he was closer to 10 or 11, but I figured I'd just give it to him, and maybe he breaks a tackle or something, and he would, obviously a smart enough player just to keep it alive, and, you know, that just tells you how good of a player he was to be that smart in that situation.
Film review the next day. I mean, do you guys just go over that one and go, you know what, this just happened, or do we actually break this down and start breaking through this and go, guys, let's not do this again?
I don't know that there was an actual coaching tip on that play. I think all I got was you're lucky that it worked out because you didn't throw it for a first down. So I'm glad it worked out for me.
We're talking with Brandon Allen here on Ruskin and Zach. The other thing, this from the fan perspective, there the waves of emotion in those moments, because you see that he's short. And then you get down, and then you see that Alex takes off, and it's a first down. And then on the last play, it looked like game over, but then there's a personal foul call on a hit on you, and then they and then they end up getting another chance, and they end up and you guys win the ball game there.
Yeah, definitely a roller coaster in that game, especially a roller coaster from emotion. But you know, on the Heath play, obviously that was a wild play. It took the refs, I think, 3 or 4 minutes to figure out what to even do. And then the first 2-point conversion was, I mean, I was looking right at the ref and he saw the guy grab my face mask. I knew that was going to be a flag. And then obviously the last play worked out well for us.
It is, you are a part of one of those, you're going to be asked about this by people forever. Is that kind of a cool thing to be a part of such a legendary moment in the history of the school?
I think it's fun. Obviously, you know, it's a lot more fun because we won the game. But you know, just that play in general was, like you said, a roller coaster of good, bad, good again. You know, and it's just kind of cool to be a part of that.
Brandon, I read playbooks like they're novels, and we always hear about like going into the draft process, how big a jump there is from the college offense to the pro offense. And you're certainly qualified to talk about that sort of jump. What is it like? What is it about the jump, not just the speed of the players, but from a technical standpoint, from a playbook standpoint, what is that jump like from going from, you know, a college offense to a pro offense?
Yeah, it's definitely different. It's there's more detail, like you said, there's more detail involved. There's a lot more things, especially the quarterback position that you're being asked to do. But it's also when you jump that NFL level, that's your job, and so you can spend a lot more time. Because your class is working on those plays. Your class is learning that whole detailed system, and you're not actually taking chemistry at 12:30 and then showing up for practice later. So there's a lot more time, I think, that you can get more detailed in those playbooks.
It's funny. I just got a text from Dowell Loggins. He said to tell you hello. give us, because none of us sitting here, and very few of us, you know, listening, have ever heard what an NFL play call sounds like. I mean, the verbiage that goes along with it. Just give me something very basic and kind of tell me what you're talking about. Because most people, when they hear, you know, we watch the Gruden QB camps, we hear Spider 2 Y Banana, and I'm like, okay, we know what that is. But that's a very, most plays don't sound like that.
Well, I mean, I've had to learn, I guess, now 4 different offenses in my NFL, and had 4 different offenses at Arkansas, and luckily, I came from a pro-style system in Arkansas, so the verbiage kind of translated a little easier for me. But definitely under McVay, there was not usually one play called at one time. You had to get in there and call 2 different plays in the huddle and be able. So we had to do a lot of shrinking of the verbiage just to. So we ended up, we had a lot of smart guys, and so we had a lot of plays that were just numbered in order to just call 2 different plays in the huddle. So. And if I gave you one right now, I mean, it's been a while now, but we had certain plays where, you know, you just have a simple pass play, you know, just could be trips right, you know, 2-jet, whatever the route concept is, and then you can it with another run play or pass play, and then that's where I talk about the detail with the quarterbacks. You have to be able to know why you want each play, what the defense is doing, and be able to get yourself in the right play.
I've heard Peyton Manning and Tom Brady talk about protections being the hardest part or the biggest part of that jump, in sort of managing the protections and making sure, you know, the play is almost the last thing you worry about. Peyton Manning said you got to be upright to deliver the ball, and getting the protections right is the first thing that that you have to do when you get to the line of scrimmage.
Absolutely. I mean, that's any quarterback, really. You got to get everyone right, and you put a lot of that on the quarterback to get everybody right. And there's so many smart guys in the NFL that, you know, you have some of the linemen seeing the protection checks, the quarterbacks seeing the protection checks. So it's kind of a group effort getting everyone right. But yeah, like you said, you can call the play, memorize it, know exactly what you're supposed to do. But if you can't get yourself upright to throw, then the point is mute.
We're talking with Brandon Allen here on Ruskin and Zach. You've learned a lot of different systems. We have Felipe Franks and the Razorback quarterbacks who are still here from last year learning a new system. What are some of the hacks to learning a new system, particularly now when you can't get on the field really anybody uh-huh. and run, you know, have all 11 or even have 7 guys, I guess, out there?
It definitely makes it harder that you can't rep the plays. But what I was able to do, not necessarily a hack, but I was able to basically take what I knew from my previous offense and then, okay, this play and this play, they're the same. And so I just got to learn. Basically, all you're doing is learning new verbiage. And so a lot of concepts will remain the same no matter what league you play in. And it really just comes down to, like, just trying to memorize the verbiage, and that's all pretty much is.
We're getting a couple of texts here. Want me to ask you about the Mississippi State game when you were clearly the best player on the field that night. What are your remembrances from that game? I mean, Dak Prescott's on the other side. You guys are just going up, both of you, up and down the field that night.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I don't know if I was the best player, but I could have been the second best behind Dak there. It was an offensive battle. And I think after the first half, we kind of knew it was going to be tough to stop that their offense. They could move the ball. Dak could do it all, throw it, run it. And so I think as an offense, we knew it was going to come down to us putting up enough points to win. And, we got together. Our pass game was really, really clicking that day. And I think they had just put so many resources into stopping our run game that it just opened up a lot of one-on-one opportunities for our receivers and tight ends. And, I had the easy job just getting them the ball, and they made all the plays for me.
And you had some great weapons. Right now, you look at young guys like Trey Knox and Treylon Burks. What would it part of you ever want to get out there and toss it around to those guys? They can go up and get it.
We have some good weapons coming back this year. That's for sure. And any quarterback will tell you their job gets so much easier when you got playmakers around you. And I'm excited to see what those two can do this year. Obviously. You got more confidence. You get any time you get some years under your belt, you get more confidence, and so I think they'll be high on confidence and coming out ready to make a lot of plays.
You crossed over with Coach Pittman when he was at Arkansas. I mean, and obviously mm-hmm. he coached the guys that were up in front of you. Tell us what, from your perspective, from the guy who works with the offensive line, what's he going to do for Arkansas, and what are some of your personal experiences with him?
Yeah, I love Sam Pittman. I think that was a great hire for us, and like you said, when I was with him, he was easily one of my favorite coaches while we were there, and obviously loved what he did with our O-line because they did a lot for me. We couldn't have won any games if it wasn't for what he was doing with them, and I've loved the relationship with him, and I've had a chance to go in and talk to him, and he's the same. I think he'll bring a lot to the offensive line. I think he's going to do a lot in recruiting, so I think sky's the limit with him there.
We're talking with Brandon Allen here on Ruskin and Zach. There's a deep tie. I remember all the former players lobbying when this was kind of up in the air, and then being excited when Sam Pittman got the job. And when we've spoken to him, we've heard him spoke. Man, there's a care factor there that's just different. Then this isn't just another gig to this guy. This is there's a care factor with this school and with that job that's different with Sam Pittman.
Yeah, I think he loved Arkansas when he was here. Obviously you can tell just by talking to him, he's happy as heck to get back. And, I think he's just he's a genuine, real human being. And I think a lot of players connect with that the guy's not just blowing smoke. He's when he says something, he means it. And I think that goes a long way in the locker room with a lot of these players.
Hey, Brandon, I want to ask you about the relationship between Felipe Franks and Kendall Briles. Your high school OC takes a lot of credit for your pro career right now. he's kind of living off that right now. But that relationship between like OC and quarterback, I mean, that's more than just, you know, guy coaching a position. I mean, those two really have to be almost symbiotic to get this thing off the ground, especially year one under these sort of circumstances.
Yeah, and I think I've heard it from a number of coaches, but the quarterback is just an extension of the coaching staff is what I've always heard. And so I think the quarterback has to be more of a coach than a player in some aspects. When the OC is calling a play, the quarterback has to be on the same page. Okay, why is he calling this play? What are we expecting in this situation for why he's dialing this up? What coverage is he thinking I'm going to see? And if it's not there, where do I go with the ball? So I think those two positions, the quarterback and the OC and the quarterback coach as well, I think all of them have to be on an identical page, and that's the only way to really have success.
You know, another thing that's got to happen is because every football season there's ups and downs, and keeping everybody kind of upbeat and still pulling on the rope during the down times has been an issue the last couple of years. What do you do there? How do you keep a locker room engaged and on board when things aren't going so well?
It's not easy, but I think a lot of that comes back to not just the quarterback, but the leaders of your team. You have to have a great core leadership on your team. And I mean, my senior season, we started out 2-4, and we were able to rattle off 5 of the next 6 wins, and or 6 of the next 7, I guess. And then it really just comes down to the leadership within the team. There's only so much that coaches can say to you. There's only so much that, only so many plays they can call. It really just comes down to your leadership in your team, getting your team to, believe you're going to win every game. Even when you've lost a couple, those games are out of your mind now. It's on to the next game. We got to win this one. I think, like I said, it just comes down to the core leadership of the team.
We had Dre Greenlaw on last Friday, and I asked him sort of the same question. I'll ask you the same thing. I mean, you're a local guy, Fayetteville High School. You had a chance to go. You're with the Rams. They go to the Super Bowl. Last year, you're throwing touchdowns against the Cleveland Browns. I mean, do you ever stop and think of that journey where in, 2010, you're throwing against Bentonville, and next thing you know, I mean, you've got the Cleveland Browns on the other side, and you're throwing to Cortland Sutton. You ever get a chance to just sort of look around the stadium and go, wow, I made it?
Not yet. I think here in about 30 years, maybe, but it happens so fast. I mean, it feels like a blink of an eye, while still back in high school. But it's all about just enjoying the little moments and staying, I think, staying present in the moment and, enjoying the highs and even enjoying some of the lows. And, I think here in 20, 30 years, I might look back and think that was pretty cool. But when you're here right now, you're just enjoying one day at a time.
Brandon Allen with us here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Brandon, thanks so much for the time today. We enjoyed it, and we'll catch up again down the road, all right?
All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks,
Brandon. All right, Brandon and all of our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
Live across Arkansas,
this is Ruskin and Zach.
It's 16 after the hour here on the Ruskin and Zach program. Barrett Salee covers college football for CBS Sports, is on CBS Sports HQ, and a host for Sirius XM College Sports Channels. And he joins us now here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Barrett, hope you're doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing good. Appreciate the time today. So the story today in college football has been this Florida State Mike Norvell situation. Norvell has issued a statement clarifying it, and the team has met. It feels like this is over and they've moved on. What have you observed from this whole situation over the last day or so?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like they've moved on. Obviously, it was not ideal what happened, but if you look at the message that was sent out, and Florida State even sent a transcript of the text message addressed to every single player. It was the same message, but it was addressed to each individual player based on who he was texting. So I understand why, you know, Marvin would say that this didn't happen, because in the Trenton interview with The Athletic, it sort of made it seem like there was a one-on-one meeting with every single player. But, I mean, look, you guys talk for a living all day and all night, so do I. And a lot of times what we think and what we mean is not exactly what we say. So Mike Norvell saying he's had conversations with everybody, you know, asking everybody, telling them to that he's proud of them and they can reach out. I mean, that is sort of what he said in that transcript. So to me, it seemed like it was a misunderstanding, and that Marvin probably spoke a little too soon and should have addressed it with Norvell before putting it on Twitter, because if he did, I think it would have made what turned out to be a huge situation really a non-issue.
Among the other news items today, Arkansas State comes up with a couple of COVID-19 positive tests. Iowa State comes up with some positive tests. I know that it's shocking now, and we're all sort of like, oh my gosh, they're positive COVID-19 tests. But I think as players and teams report, I think we're going to see more of this, where teams are basically saying, hey, we've got guys that are positive.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point. I mean, when you have mandatory testing, when players arrive back on campus, you're going to have positives. And, you know, honestly, you know, having asymptomatic positives, yes, well, it does put other people at risk, obviously. I think it maybe this thing is more prevalent than it has been, and thus, less deadly and less dangerous. So, you know, yeah, you're expecting this. It's the same concept that we've had, you know, state by state over the last 3 months. If, you know, we have these tests and, you know, dumped in bulk by these state health departments, well, yeah, of course the numbers are going to go up. More people, that's how it works. So, yeah, we better get used to it. I think what's newsworthy now is that, you know, these teams and these players, you know, go into the protocols that were recently established. And so now we get to figure out and see how those work and what the process is moving forward beyond that. And I say, yeah, we should get used to this. It's going to happen at every single school. And, I think, honestly, it's part of the plan. And we all should have known that before this whole thing started.
We're talking with Barrett Sully from CBS Sports here on Ruskin and Zach. What I'm curious is about, Barrett, with that situation is, when we get to the season, and I mean, we all know that college football is notorious for saying, you know, kind of slow playing an injury, and then all of a sudden you look up and a guy's not on the field on Saturday. Well, what happened? Well, he's had a knee thing already. I wonder, will this be handled differently, or will, if a star player or two get test positive during the season, if we'll have to wait until Saturday to find out, oh, they didn't practice all week because they've been sick?
I think we'll have to have some sort of communication, between schools and within schools, because, you know, you look at what happened now. Alabama had 5 players tested. Well, immediately those players go into quarantine and contact tracing begins. Well, if you have a football player test positive on a Tuesday of game week, well, then contact tracing means everybody in the football department, you know, and probably everybody who he played on Saturday, you know. So I think there has to be some sort of communication, more openness, and willingness to have personal medical records put out there. Otherwise, you can't really control this the way that you're supposed to control it. I mean, the idea is, you know, that we're supposed to have knowledge of who has it and who they've been in contact with. And you know, in the regular season, you know, these players are going to be in contact with a lot of people, not just inside their own football programs as well. So, I think you're going to have to. I don't know how you do that, get around HIPAA laws like that. Maybe you sign a waiver, just like you do if you're going into to a season where, you know, your personal injuries, you know, torn ACLs, pulled muscles, whatever, can be released. Maybe you do it that way. I don't know.
It's been a wild 24-hour news cycle. There's been all sorts of on the field or soon to be on the field issues. But one of the things I want to ask you about is Johnny Majors passed away at the age of 85 yesterday. It's my position. He's probably one of the most influential coaches of the back half of the 20th century. Tell me a little bit about Johnny Majors, his influence at Tennessee and Pittsburgh and Iowa State and all the places where he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think at Pitt, he sort of brought Pitt into a new era. You know, like he not only obviously recruited Tony Dorsett, but, I think he made Pitt recognizable for local kids for decades. They were independent. Yeah, that changed, obviously. But beyond, Tony Dorsett, he probably has a lot to do with why Dan Marino played at Pitt, even though, he was already gone. And then at Tennessee, they were just sort of a middling program. And then with him, obviously three SEC championships made Tennessee fans and players, sort of take hold of the whole VFL, Vol for Life thing, and I'll give my all for Tennessee. All that stuff that the general program, he sort of reinvented for really the last three decades, even though the last decade hasn't been great for Tennessee. The fact that, it has been so down based on its previous standards. Those standards were set by Johnny Majors. And has had a lasting impact on Tennessee and Pitt, and really the college football world in general.
Barrett Salee's our guest here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Barrett Salee with CBS Sports here on Ruskin and Zach. So this college football season is going to be interesting because – some places had some spring practice, and you look at a situation like Arkansas where it is June 4th, and this group has never even been on a field running any kind of play at all, and probably won't until at the latest August. What is the quality of play going to take a while to warm up? What do you expect to see from college football on the field this year? I'd imagine in some of these early big blockbuster games might, have kind of a clumsy appearance at times.
No doubt. And a team like Arkansas is going to be hurt drastically by this because, like you said, they haven't practiced before and they have a new coach. And not only a new coach, a coach who hasn't been a head coach at the college level since, the early 90s, and that was junior college. So, yeah, I mean, a team like Arkansas is going to be in big, big trouble. Even a team like LSU that is ultra talented, but none of these kids have played together. So many new faces, coaching changes, scheme changes, all that stuff. And it goes to something that I say every offseason. A lot of these magazines that we get every single offseason, they have a list of returning starters and who has the most returning starters. And, a lot of those magazines base predictions off of those. And in reality, some of those guys just aren't very good. If you have 16 returning starters, what if 11 of them aren't very good? It doesn't really matter all that much, but in this particular season, it will matter a lot because you have, a bunch of different, a different set of circumstances. And if you have, an entrenched offensive line or a quarterback that has two receivers who he knows well and is comfortable with, well, that's going to cut out, 2 weeks of camp. And, a lot of these coaches would like to have a rough draft of their depth chart by the end of spring practice. Now they have no idea what it's going to be. And they won't know until about 2 weeks into fall camp. So it really does, yes, it's going to be sloppy play for sure. And a team like Arkansas is going to get really hurt by it, probably going to be sloppier than most because of not only, where they were coming from, but the fact that you have a brand new head coach who hasn't done this in a long, long time.
As we get these dates and we see, and we'll eventually get a date on when practice starts. You're one of my favorite follows on Twitter because you hate everybody's team, but it just feels like it feels like college football fans are back and they're starting to, they're picking at the national guys, you and everybody else. I mean, you got into a Twitter thing the other day. I mean, you hate Georgia, right? I mean, you're there in Georgia. You absolutely hate the Dogs, right?
I hate Georgia, even though I was the only person in the world who picked them to go to the national championship game before the 2017 season. It's part of the job, man. Like that's what makes it fun. It's so much more enjoyable now after we've gone through all that we've gone through for the last 4 months to get back to normal. I hate you because you hate my team conversations. It feels like it's actual college football season again. So, apparently now I'm a Georgia hater, which, whatever. That's what makes it fun. But honestly, when you get into conversations like that, and people bring that at you or me or whoever, to me, it's just a sign of the week. It's a sign that you have no other option and no other argument. And you know what? We're just going to throw out bias and hope it sticks, even though it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, our favorite one is you suck. we get that a lot. So, yeah, we're with you.
Well, and see, I mean, and honestly, has that ever been debated?
No, not at all. No, we don't even protest.
No, it's a given.
I mean, that's a nod your head and smile.
That's,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Barrett Salee's with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Okay, so short term at Arkansas, it's gonna be a rough go. But Pittman, Odom running the defense, Kendall Briles running the offense. As you look forward, if these three stay together 2-3 years down the road, what do you see with Arkansas? Do they turn this thing around and become a program that gets to bowl games year in and year out again?
Yeah, they can. I think that's probably the short-term goal that Arkansas fans should have. I mean, you know, when you sign up with Sam Pittman, you know, you're signing up for a slow rebuild, and that's not to say he can't do it. I love Sam Pittman, but, you know, this is brand new. If you judge the way I think it's pretty clear that he wants to play old school in terms of the line of scrimmage. But, you know, he does want, and Kendall Briles obviously is a guy that can bring that, not just from a scheme standpoint, but from a recruit. Yeah, it's going to take a little while. This year probably will be rough. But, you know, I think if they recruit Texas the way they want to, and Sam Pittman is a great recruiter, then yeah, I think in a couple years, you're looking at, you know, 6-6 kind of consistently. And then, you know, if you catch a good year, you go 8-4, and then beyond that, who knows? You know, who knows what the landscape of the SEC will look like once that is established. But yeah, 3 years, you know, going to bowl games consistently. Yeah, I think that should be the expectation. I know it kind of sucks for fans and players who are, you know, upperclassmen there at Arkansas right now. But it is when you go through what you've gone through the last few years at Arkansas, you know, it's going to take a little while.
It feels like this program just needs stability at all positions, head coach, offense coordinator, and especially at quarterback, where Felipe Franks rolls in for his first year. He's got 2 years of eligibility if he wants them. What does Felipe Franks bring to a Kendall Briles offense year one?
He's got a big arm. We all know about his arm. I mean, go back and look at that last second Hail Mary against Tennessee a few years back in the Swamp. I mean, he slung that thing on the run like 65, 70 yards to the back of the end zone. So he's got the arm strength. He doesn't have a ton of touch. I think that's a problem in Kendall Briles, in Kendall Briles' offense, because they do utilize a lot of the short passes, quick passes to sort of set everything up. So there's that problem. He does, I think, bring more of the running element than maybe he showed at Florida. He's a big kid. I mean, I remember standing next to Felipe Franks, you know, 3 years ago thinking, wow, this dude looks like a video game. Like, he's a large, large dude. So, you can do some things with him, and I expect Kendall will. You know, so yeah, he's got theoretically 2 years remaining. I would imagine he uses those, both of them, because I don't think 1 year is going to, you know, garner any looks from the NFL. So yeah, you know, I think he's an adequate quarterback. He has the skills to be really good, but I think he maybe gets a little too. He thinks that he can fit balls in where he really can't, and you know, that's a lot of quarterbacks. A lot of them get that dose of reality as a freshman, and they get over it, and they move on. I don't know if Felipe ever really got that. I don't know if he ever kind of got that, you know, reality that he's not, you know, any better or worse than any of these kids, whereas, you know, in high school, you're better than everybody.
Yeah. Barrett Salee with us, CBS Sports, covering college football. A lot's ramping up as the SEC gets back to voluntary workouts next week, and more as the summer rolls on. Barrett, we appreciate the time today. Thank you so much.
All right, y'all. Thanks for having me.
All right. Barrett and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. We hope you were able to get a lot out of that. We fought some phone problems there, and I think most of the message was clear on Barrett's opinions on the different things going on right now.
His opinion's not a whole lot different than a lot of other people's, which is this is going to be an uphill climb.